Hello, everybody. Yeah. It's Terry Bell. This is our Sun teleclass where we invite experts and invited guests to share their knowledge, wisdom, and being with us. It is Monday, September 16th, and I have the pleasure of introducing Lola. We met in 2020, 24 years ago, when I was invited to present to the Hong Kong chapter. And you know what it's like? Yeah, we probably do have this experience a lot in Sun. You meet someone and instantly you know you're beginning a journey together for a reason, right? You've had that experience? Well, yes, I can see faces. Oh, hello, Elena. So for 15 years, Lola was based in Seija and Nashia. Am I saying it correctly? And now the U.S., New York. She is a global psychodynamic coach and leadership development trainer, passionate, and I add, so wise about coaching ethics. She's humble. She didn't put that in. Coaching and leadership development. She's an expert on ethics. Now, an expert, in my mind, is not someone who knows the ethics, but someone who lives it. So I present to you Lola Chetty, an expert in ethics.
Thank you very much. This is so lovely, Terry. So good morning, everyone. I'm really pleased to be here, but especially pleased because it's Terry who asked. Terry knows how much I hold her in very high esteem, especially her wisdom and her knowledge around coaching. So I'm really glad to be here this morning. I, like Terry said, for 15 years I've worked globally. I'm Mauritian French, so I've worked a lot in Europe, a lot in Asia with European companies, and also in the US last year, and then I moved to the US last year, so I'm really happy to be based here now. So for the next 45 minutes or so, I have prepared a presentation, but let us not get held by the presentation. Ask questions. Clarify, don't hesitate to take me off on another path which is interesting to you. And this is what matters. It's more the time that we spend together, the questions that you have, the exchanges. This is what will really enhance it. The presentation is just here, just in case. So I'll start showing it. So I think I can share. Yes, here we are. And the most important part is really hearing your questions, your comments, and even challenges, because this is what really enriches the whole conversation that we have around coaching ethics. So I always put a notion when I speak about coaching ethics, because it really represents what ethics is. It's ever moving. It's deep, very deep. What we see at the surface is not what we can see under the surface. It's ever shifting, yet it's always there. And also, just like an ocean, which is part and parcel of the universe in which we live, ethics is the life giver. Without ethics, there is no coaching profession as such. It is the oxygen on which the coaching profession thrives. And not only the coaching profession, because coaching is here because of life. Ethics allows life to grow and thrive. We wouldn't have had civilization without ethics, because we'd be too busy killing each other and trying to basically get what we want at any cost. So this is why ethics exists. It exists, it goes in pair with civilization. It's the bedrock of civilization. And please stop me anytime, I'll repeat it again, if you want to ask me any question. So I will go very quickly around this, how I came to ethics. I won't read the slide. It's really around this purpose of life. After leaving the judiciary, whereas I was at the bench for 6.5 years and 4 years at the Attorney General's office, I actually became a volunteer social worker for 6.5 years in refugee camps. Because, and this is what took me to coaching, because I wanted to have a methodology to reach out to people, but also to trigger their motivation, to trigger the thirst for life, the thirst to go forward, no matter what our circumstances are. And actually, by pure coincidence, most of my kids I worked with during these 6.5 years as a part-time volunteer social worker are actually resettled in the US. They live mainly in Indiana here. And I also run a course which is evidence-based. My specializations are leadership development. I have a master from INSEAD in leadership development and psychodynamic coaching, individual, team, or organizational. So let's go back to the most important reason we are here, ethics. Ethics is not new. It's like the ocean, like I said. And if you look at the source of ethics, 2,500 years before, so almost 5,000 to, yeah, well, I'm not really good at maths, 4,000, only close to 5,000 years ago in the Rig Veda, and it's recorded. There is the doctrine of ahimsa, do no harm, which is primum non nocere, right? Which is really do no harm, and this was actually used by Gandhi during independence for India. So 400 years before Christ, Hippocrates incorporates in his oath a lot of issues we still deal with: confidentiality, no sexual involvement with patients, and you see they are replicated in our code of ethics. You would look at number one of the core competencies, and then we look at section standards two, standards six, Standards 24, Standards 30, another code of ethics replicates this, no personal relationship, intimate relationship with our clients, seeing our clients as whole, capable. And then Moses ben Maimon, also in the 1200, he created a prayer that emphasizes the obligation of doctors, seeing their vulnerable patients, not only as, you know, people who need help, who are vulnerable, but also whole human beings who also were part of their solution. And also he emphasized that thirst for fame is not what we work towards. Or gladly helping the rich and the poor. And if we look into our code of ethics, it's very clear. There is a clear standard that says that we give the same services to every one of our clients, irrespective of whether they pay us or they do not pay us. It's not a justification to say I'm giving a different standard of care. So in the Western world, it was Thomas Percival in 1740. He was a doctor and he started really putting together in the medical profession the notion that we needed ethics in order to move forward, to make it sustainable, respectful. Therefore, my contention, and I say it, ethics is the oxygen that allows coaching profession and the coaching professionals to grow and thrive. Because think about it, there wouldn't be any civilization if every time a group of people or a family had to leave their cave, look for another cave and say, okay, we'll leave the sick and the old behind. Those who can't walk, we'll just get rid of them. Right? So, and if we look at anthropology, and we cannot divorce ethics from anthropology, the first sign of civilization is actually the sign of a healed femur bone, because it means that this person who couldn't walk had to be carried, nurtured, fed, looked after. And that's why I say ethics is the oxygen of life. Any questions? So let's go to, again, our code. You will see that all of you, you know, we pledge, even when we renew our credentials, we have a pledge that we're going to abide by our code of ethics, our coaching code, ICF coaching code of ethics. So let's think of it. Does, and my question is to you, is all ethics contained in the code? Can ethics be contained in a code of ethics? Uh-huh. Please unmute yourselves, because I think that's the most important first proposition that I have for you. Yes?
Well, Terry, please. I don't think so, because if it was all there and completely clear, we wouldn't have created the ICE. Is it still called ICE? No, EIS.
Interpretive statement.
The ICE, yeah. The interpretations, which don't absolutely really interpret. They provide more of the conversation of what's in the standard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a, this is the way you have to do it. That's not it at all. It's a guidance for reflection on going to apply the ethics. So I think there is more.
Excellent. It cannot be contained in the four neat corners of any code in the world. And that's why codes of ethics are revised every 3 years by ICF. And that's why I referred to the ocean. It's ever changing. Mm. It has to adapt to culture. It has to adapt to civilization. If some of you, like myself, were coaches, even pre-2020, remember, conflict of interest wasn't in our code of ethics in the first place, and then we added conflict of interests, right? Uh-huh. It's because the science of the times shows exactly what is it that we have to look at. I really love this quote by Albert Schweitzer, which really for me encompasses what it means to be ethical. It's not only what is in the code is a guide. The code is a very strong guide. It gives us the parameters, but it cannot be contained. Ethics is about reasoning in every situation, and that's why I mentioned the ocean. We're going to have new cases depending on culture, depending on how the world evolves, depending also on challenges that we have. Because at the end of the day, it's not saying, oh, I'm having this challenge, so here I cannot be ethical. Ethics said, teaches the world who we are by what we do through our behavior. Ethics is really about who we are, and who we truly are is really, we humans, we like gold. It's when we test it that we knew what we're made of, when we go through fire. And as coaches, it can be sometimes our own self-interest that we have to leave behind in order to be ethical, truly ethical. So if we look at it, our code of ethics legitimizes the profession, preserves the integrity, puts us in a lifelong quest for excellence. So ethics can never be contained. It's about our reasoning and behavior. If we look at it, there are, ethics is so important. If you look just as ICF, ICF has put so many parameters about ethics. There is an independent review board to which Terry belonged and to which I belong now as a board member. Mm-hmm. So we look at, basically, people come to the IRB to complain about perceived wrongs, ethical breaches. ICF members take a pledge, as we know. There's also the ethical conduct review process, which also sets the standard for coaching schools, the ethical standards. Whom of you know about the yearly conduct and compliance, ethical conduct and compliance reports? Every year they are online. And they speak about the complaints that come to the IRB and what are the trends. They are very important documents to know, and we can just type them online, and they have been published online to the public. for public use since 2020, and we had the last one 2023. So
what was the name of it again? The conduct and compliance
reports. And I'll give you an example, because that's the experience. I was really taken aback, and I thought, you know, this is something that I need to share with coaches. So there are the interpretative statements, but most important for the reasoning, because there will be cases which are not found, which are not bound into the code of ethics, are our values of professionalism, collaboration, humanity, equity, and more important is what do we stand for as human beings? What do we stand for as coaches? This will never fail us because it's a guide in the reasoning, and they are really good guides. And in a way, I always feel a little bit bad that although we say that our values are important, we are not held to them in our code specifically, right, in our behavior. But they are extremely helpful guides. They're not just nice to have. So here is the yearly ethical conduct compliance report, and that's from 2020. And with the dots on the map, you can see the countries around the world where the cases came from. And here IRB has published, there were 32 complaints. And as you see, 20% were about the conflict of interest, 10% general business disputes. Very interesting, 35% breach of confidentiality, 35% not maintaining appropriate boundaries with our clients. Right? Mm-hmm. 2021. Very quickly, and by the way, don't worry about it. You just go online and you type yearly ethical conduct and compliance report and you'll get 2020 to 2023. You can see 31% again, not maintaining appropriate boundaries with clients. 18% misrepresentation of self and services. Unclear contracting, again, breach of confidentiality, conflict of interest again. So there's a trend forming here. And we have to look at trends. Data is important. What's also important is to look at the origin of the complaints. It's broadened up after 2021. 2022, do you see the many dots? 21 complaints, said broadens. It means that people are, clients are becoming more ethically aware as well. Again, breach of confidentiality, conflict of interest, unclear contracting, misrepresentation, inappropriate conduct. Let's look at 2023 now. Interesting. Origins of the countries. 5 complaints were deemed not eligible, 10 were heard, 15 formal complaints heard. Very important. Right to terminate becomes very important. It means contracting. It also means we have to hear alarm bells when people start writing, I have 100 on my direct messages on LinkedIn. How do you lock in clients? Massive red flag. On a coach, there's lock in the client. We're not about locking in people. We're about freeing people. Breach of confidentiality.
Dola, can you explain what you said? What does it mean, lock the client? Can you
lock in client through our contracts? So you have all these...
through the contracts, okay.
I'm going to help you with your contract to lock in 100 clients a month. Well, locking in has a price, and locking in means something, and that's a big red flag. This is about contracting. Did I answer your question, Ortel? Yes.
Yes, thank you.
So, inappropriate conduct, again, 2023. And what you see here, and I think it's very important, power differential, because people are becoming very and more aware of power differential now, that it is part and parcel of ethics. right? But look at this, breach of confidentiality. Again, every year. But look at right to terminate. So this data is important for us coaches. These are the tools. Yes.
Lola, does this include the schools or just the coaches
the schools
or both?
Are separate. You will also see that this report, unfortunately I didn't put it in, also has a separate now item for schools, because this is also increasing. Mm-hmm. Right?
I thought so, because I saw different proportions when I looked up something. Yeah.
Yeah, Sharon, I can't see you, but I see there's a notice here. Can I take the question?
You're on mute, Sharon.
Sharon, we can't hear you.
Thank you. Sorry, Terry. Yeah. No, I just was noticing, though, of what you're showing, it looks like a lot, 50%, but it's just six complaints.
It's only six
complaints. Oh, it's only three that were, inappropriate conduct. So it's not a large number. It is a large percentage. And
it
that's,
is a large percentage.
That's true on the other ones as well. So it's small numbers.
And but here they said 10. Five were taken. But also, let's keep into consideration that breaches of the code, ECR process and IRB looks only at the breaches of the standards in the code. And we said earlier, when it comes to ethical behavior, it's larger than the code. Right?
Okay.
So here, so what's interesting here is to learn from these. And we have to look at the trends. Power differential comes for the first time in 2023. And we all know that today, people, populations around the world are becoming more and more aware of power differentials and how it plays on people, how it's exhibited. We recognize power differential now, and we recognize also the impact it has on populations. So, before I go into how we can enhance our coaching awareness, what are the questions that you have for me? And please tell me if this is interesting to you, or what are your views on what I've said right now, because it's my duty to make sure that whatever I'm saying is of interest to you.
Well, I hope I'm not the only one. This is fascinating. Some of which I've heard before, but some of which I haven't. I have not been on the IRB. I just have many friends on the IRB.
Well, by accident.
Yeah, I've been on the code review team, but I haven't had the privilege of serving on the IRB. Especially I love your ocean metaphor.
Yes.
I love it.
I work a lot with art and metaphors when we work with trauma, psychodynamic, and we look at trauma, because it's really one of the best evidence-based approaches, research-based approaches to work with drawings, trauma, and art. And for me, it was really the ocean, the life-giving. Coaching is about life. How do we make life grow? How do we make life thrive? We are the agents of ethics. We are the agents of life, because we going with our client trying to find out what is life giving to them.
Right.
This is what we try to do all the time. And anything which is not life giving is anathema to coaching.
I like that. I refer to us as ambassadors, but I have a very difficult question which comes up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I am not a coach, I'm in a family gathering, and I don't behave according to the coaching guidelines and code. Am I responsible? Will I be what would be the word? Am I in trouble?
I don't think so, depending on what you do, Terry, how bad it is. If it's something criminal, I'd say yes, you would be. But if you do things like I do, argue with my brother nonstop whilst my mom has a breakdown, I don't think I can be held to it. Still unethical, because here I'm not presenting myself as a coach. I'm presenting myself as a daughter. as a very rebellious sister, right?
Right.
So it's about who we are, how we present ourselves. But I would really say if I go to the supermarket and people know me as the coach, if they Google my name, they will see Lola Chetty. And I have very sexist or racist language. I think it's completely unfair game to be taken to task as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because my behavior is falling short of being an agent for life, an agent for progress. We don't need to be perfect, but when we present ourselves to be these agents for ethics, these agents for coaching, for standards, for life, for growth, we have to walk the talk. It's also what we call fashionably personal branding.
Hmm.
Right? No. So if we look at it, starts, everything starts with awareness. With coaching, it starts with awareness. We follow with ownership. We follow with reasoning. And then we follow with the choices that we make. We are constantly doing this with our clients. And we are constantly doing this when we learn as well. Right? So how do we enhance? Because sometimes I've been in cases where I've really had to think through it. Because, for example, I've seen cases where it was going against the personal interest of a coach. And this wasn't in the code of ethics. What were we supposed to do? So I would say it all starts with awareness. And awareness starts with looking at reflection on our practices. Banish, this is the way I do, this is the way I have already done, or this is the way it is done. Have fresh eyes in the light of the world in which we live in. Have fresh eyes in the light of things that are happening in the world. We can't just go into something because this is the way I've been told. Leaning into our discomfort, I think, is the most important. Because, and if you think of it, if we look at ethical awareness, it really starts with a feeling of discomfort, which we may just push aside and say, no, justified, because it's fine, because no one knows what situation I'm in. No one else is in this situation. That's why they can't. No. When we're doing this, we're actually pushing away the awareness. It's about leaning into it and saying, why is this calling my attention? Why does this make me feel uncomfortable? Why does this make me feel aimed at?
Thank you.
Not what the person is saying.
Yeah.
It's what it's doing to us. It's something in us calling us to think, mm-hmm. right? Then we need to listen, explore intuitively. What we do with our coaches is exactly that. Explore intuitively. So it's about reflection, leaning into discomfort, listening and exploring. I've seen the hand of Elena, so I'll just stop and ask you, what's your question, Elena? You've raised your hand.
Thank you, Lola. It is something regarding with the words, with vocabulary, and perhaps Alfonso, or I don't know, perhaps Enrique or Rafael could help me, because I don't have clear the meaning of awareness in comparing with consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness, because
you are correct. It's the same distinction in English.
But no, es que no sé la diferencia. No, excuse me. Entonces, what I am want is to clarify what is what. If it's possible, I don't know.
Absolutely. Awareness is not certain. Awareness is a little bit vaguer. It's just knowing there is something here, a bit like an intuition. Consciousness is that solid, robust stance of knowing, I am conscious of this.
Yeah.
And that's why awareness demands leading into it, to know more about it. When we have an intuition, we are conscious about our intuition, but we may not be fully aware of what it is telling us. We may be aware of intuition, but not fully conscious of what is it about.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Do I make sense? Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
And it's very important to recognize that we are in a dilemma, because if we don't recognize we're in a dilemma, well, that's it. We close the conversation. I am in the situation, so I justify it. That's why I have to think like that. And usually to recognize a dilemma will demand that we recognize ourselves, but we recognize also others. We cannot just take our own suffering. It's also the suffering of others. This is what creates a dilemma. Dilemma demands a certain sense of empathy, an openness of a mind. And there is no empathy without openness of a mind. Right? Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. Elena, you have another question. Raphael as well. No? Raphael? Echo, we can't hear you, Raphael.
Yeah, there's actually scientific research that shows that unless you have your microphone on, people cannot hear you. It's been replicated all over the world. So for me, dilemma is something that is very is very special, because dilemma really does not have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we normally in the world of ethics very seldom are confronted with a dilemma per se. I think in most situations we're confronted with a situation that requires us to make a difficult choice, but mm-hmm. it seldom becomes a dilemma by definition, because by definition a dilemma essentially has no solution.
I'll distinguish with what you're saying. I would say a dilemma has no perfect solution.
Right, good.
But that's why it demands a choice.
Oh, yes. We always are called to make a choice.
Exactly. That's why it's calling for a difficult choice to make. Right?
Yes.
A dilemma is when we may have tons of choices, none of them being perfect and completely satisfactory.
You know, I'm thinking, Lola, that a dilemma is always unresolved until the body gives the awareness, not the head. The body gives the awareness
mm-hmm.
of what the best choice is for self and others. So the dilemma precedes the information in the body, which then can give options, and then we choose.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
But the dilemma becomes more concrete than the awareness. It's like, what are the choices I have? But every choice is not a great choice. Here I lose. Here they lose. Here I win. Here they win. But a dilemma demands courage. And I would say that for me, I've had many coaching dilemmas in my practice. And also when I supervise, see my clients. I do a lot of organizational coaching. I've worked most of my life in organizations. And it's really dilemmas. And dilemmas, we call them dilemmas because there is no clear reasoning, no clear way out of the woods. It demands our own emotional courage, our own coaching courage to resolve and to make a choice. And this is where it becomes interesting. the choice, how do we make it an ethical choice? What would constitute the most coach ethical choice? Then I would say, this is what I do. And by the way, Terry, if you didn't know, you're a big part of my ethics board. I have all these honorary members that I call when I'm stuck. So please find out you're an unpaid board member and a very, very revered and honored one. So I have many of his fabulous people that I call, not all of them in the coaching industry, when I'm stuck, because I want to hear what they have to say so that I make an informed decision and an enlightened choice. And I think it's important. When I started as a new coach, I was extremely lucky to be part of a pod of 8 global coaches. And Carol Whitaker was in one of them, the lady who publishes these bestsellers on supervision. And it was fantastic what I learned, even before becoming an ACC. So I was able to really, because it was all about the reasoning. And I think everybody should have an ethical board. I'm never without a supervisor. I'm never without a mentor. I'm never without an ethical board, even after 15 years, because I am not a perfect source of knowledge, certainly when my interests are at stake, because it is human to always put our interest first. Even as coaches, we're human. And to know that is to mean that we need other people also to show us the light in these moments.
I also want to draw people's attention to the chat. Raphael has put in a dictionary definition.
Yes. Well, actually, that's what comes up in Wikipedia, but I remember having to use this at an ethics workshop that I had to deliver. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are seldom confronted with dilemmas in most of the situations in our life, we're confronted with an ethical problem. Very seldom are we confronted with a situation where both of the options available are wrong.
I can give you a perfect example.
Oh, yeah, there are. I'm not saying that there aren't.
I personally, working in organizations, I see a lot of dilemmas where the coach has to accept to lose with the client, where the client, let me give you a dilemma, and this is happening more and more now. The coach tells the client, challenges the client is not happy, fires the coach, and so goes to the organization and says, oh, this coach is not great. I don't want to work with him or her anymore. Do we breach confidentiality? Because we're losing a contract, we're also losing a relationship. This is a big dilemma.
That's interesting, because, for example, in my case, what I would think of saying would be, that's that client's opinion. I wouldn't take it much further than that. Unless I have many clients confronting me with the same situation, I would let it go. That would not be something that I would breach confidentiality or even think it's worth challenging.
Yeah. Well, if you're losing your contract and you're losing your reputation, Raphael, it's okay not to lose sleep. But if you're working and you have a big contract that's at stake based on this feedback,
it would have to be the only contract, and I would have to gauge that within the realm of my whole professional endeavor. So is this actually an isolated instance that actually can challenge and put into question my integrity and my reputation?
Mm-hmm.
If it is, then I could see getting closer to the issue of how do we handle this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Have a big client, a first contract with the first client who actually does this. And there are other contracts, dozens that follow. And the head of HR is looking at the coach as somebody who's been unprofessional. So it will happen, because this is life. Life is filled with dilemmas. when we have to make choices and none of them are completely good, when sometimes we have to make lose-win decisions, right? And that's because of our ethics, who we are and what we stand for as coaches. So and I really like what Eileen wrote. This decision relates to our core values, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how we can get hooked on semantics here to a certain extent.
You think so? Tell me more.
Well, meaning how we interpret dilemmas. We can move ahead and not get into this because this could be another session altogether.
Okay. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is that our practice in its essence will bring us in front of dilemmas. And dilemmas will ask us to make ethical choices. And these ethical choices may not always be win-win. They may be lose-win sometimes to be ethical, right? We have to accept. Edgar.
And Carla has...
Thank you, Lola. Connecting to what you are saying, there has been something that has been always making me noise in terms of, you know, in the Code of Ethics, they clearly say that we make a differentiation between coaching and mentoring, for instance, yes? But how about, and connected to the main goal of ourselves, which is to serve our clients in the best possible way?
Mm-hmm.
Here comes the noise when the client is asking, I need you to mentor me on this.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me noise, but it's something that I face very frequently. And then, okay, I stop there and I tell you what I do. What do you think about that?
Well, the clients can ask us for many things. Teach me, enable me, mentor me. We have to go back to the contract. What did we contract for? There are some contracts that I sign with organizations where they ask me to do leadership training and coaching. So I have to know what I'm doing and I have to go back to my contract. What was my original agreement? But also think of it, there are things like confidentiality. Even if a client accepts, if an unaware client accepts that, oh, please disclose my 360. To my boss, the coach has the duty of care to inform these clients that they cannot, that it's not the practice. But is that what you want? They have the duty of care to say what could be the repercussions to tell their clients, because this client is unaware, because confidentiality is a given. You see, Edgar? And when they say mentor, well, if a client, I think we do what serves the client, but we have to recontract. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, you're speaking about visibility to a client, and it happened to me. We're speaking about visibility, and because I teach leadership, I know the rules to create organization visibility. Keep asking the clients what they do, and they're completely stuck. They don't have any way to do it. And do you think it's ethical for me not to share with the client what does best practices teach? Because this client is stuck. So I have to say, when we're closing, would it be helpful for you to know more about the best practices around visibility?
Mm-hmm.
But it is with the client's consent that we do this. It is still ethically possible. And I would say ethically needed as well. Am I making sense?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is something that I'm really bad at, and I've always been bad at and probably will die being bad at, it's time. So if you think I'm speaking too much and I'm not giving enough time and space, just interrupt me, okay? So this is basically how we as coaches is getting up close and personal with our code of ethics, but also going beyond the code of ethics. Ethical conduct cannot never, like the ocean, it cannot be contained within the four neat corners of a code. It's like us human beings. We cannot only be contained by laws. That's why there are loopholes. We always hear about loopholes. And that's why it needs our reasoning. And again, we come back to what we said. At the end of the day, ethics is about who we are, what we do, how we behave. It comes down to this. And our profession, what we stand for, is important. And by the way, Edgar, not all of us stand for, you know, doing the best for the clients. Most of us do, but there are exceptions. And that's why it's so important for coaching schools to get their students, before they go to work as coaches, to reflect, who are you? What do you stand for? Who do you want to be? How do you want to come across? How are you representing the whole world of coaching every time you step into a session or you go and speak to others as a coach? That's why it's important. So if we look at there are responsibility to clients, confidentiality, conflicts of interest, of course, they are much higher for the internal coach than the external coach, but also very present for the external coach because there's also contracts at stake. We also get paid there, right? Let's not forget about this. Respect to all parties to terminate the coaching, and that's why we're not supposed to lock in people, right? Mm-hmm. Multiplicity of contracts and relationship. As a matter of practice, I share my code of ethics with my clients so that it keeps me on my toes then also to be there. It keeps me in my lane. And I think it's really good practice. It's not so much for the client as it is for me. I was a lawyer in my past life. I always think that, you know, when people know the law, they know their rights. It makes us also more powerful. Yes,
Walter. So in the first meeting that you have the intake, the exploratory, you introduce the code of ethics with him, or you send it to him, or you talk, you have a conversation about
it? I talk about it because these are also protections for my clients. Mm-hmm. These are their protections that they have. Mm-hmm. We are also ethical agents. So ethical agents, you know, example starts, leadership is by example. So, of course, I will not go and start, if you need to report me, this is how you report me, because I'll just basically make the person absolutely paranoid. But what I say is that like any profession, we have a code, and the client also has recourse. And if you want to know more, there is this code, here it is, and the recourse is there. If you have any question before we start, please come back to me before we contract.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So if we look at it, it's really the responsibility. Limits of confidentiality, I always say, confidentiality is a given. And when we are going to contract to breach confidentiality or to break confidentiality or to share things, our clients should be very enlightened by us. This is also our duty of care. Yes, Terry.
One sentence, Lola. If I'm correct, it's been a best practice to also share the code of ethics with anyone that you contract with for services.
Exactly.
And they sometimes come back and say, I have my own code of ethics. I said, good, let me see them. Here's ours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because this prevents, for example, when you have a series of large contracts with someone who says, can you please tell me how really are they doing? I'm a bit worried. And then we have a conflict of interest. Our contract's coming, big dilemma. How do I please this person? Because we are human beings. And then, oh my God, confidentiality. it makes it very clear because this person knows, then I'm having been a lawyer has really helped me because everything is very clear. Okay. I tell people from the beginning, even the sponsors, I will not share anything. Even if we meet in the corridor, at best I will listen to you. But if we need to speak, the client and I have to be in the room. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Responsibility to clients. Again, confidentiality, and you can make the link with what happens about the complaints which were heard. Record keeping. And then what we have to do is to look about our reasoning, because it's ethical reasoning that hopefully leads to the courage to make ethical choices. It starts, I use here the, and I better be myself, very ethical. This is not by me, it's by Jonathan Passmore, whom Terry and I know well, who edited the book. Jonathan wrote about basically action, awareness, classification. Is this a dilemma? And if it is a dilemma, is that we do not have satisfactory answers for this at this moment. Time to reflect, support, advise, get supervision. I think supervision is super important. One thing which really surprises me, maybe I haven't spoken to enough coaches, is that a lot of people don't know about supervision in America. Whereas in Europe, we are all supervised as soon as we become coaches. And I'm supervised every year. And I supervise others as well. Supervision is so important because it's like having this mentor, this person who's had experience, who helps us see what we don't see. Because awareness happens when we see, but when we don't know what we don't know, it's very difficult to have awareness. And that's why supervision matters. A mentor looks at core competencies. The supervisor has a very holistic look. And that's why we also need a board of ethics. Initiate options, pros and cons. Evaluate the risk. Think of our own biases. The bias is always self-interest. Novate. Novate, it means after we've taken a decision, we share with others to see what do they think about it. And another can be also, which I add this to Jonathan's Passmore's action, it's about, think of it, would I be comfortable if what I said or what I did was in the front page of the New York Times tomorrow?
Well, yes, we have about 2 minutes left.
Yes.
So
and that's the end.
Oh, that's the end. Okay.
The end, and I have time. I know your time is precious.
Oh, I wish.
If there are questions and people want to stay back.
Yeah, I would like to schedule you for the next 10 teleclasses.
Yes. So I'll stop sharing now.
So, how was this, guys? I mean, did you pick up at least one new thing?
If you find it helpful, please tell me.
Alfonso.
Feedback and questions.
I find the conversation about ethics some of the most stimulating in our field, because it pushes us in that process of self-awareness of where our values may conflict with someone else's. And, you know, what is the right decision to make? And then what is the right decision to make depends on from where that right decision calculation is coming from. Is it coming from me? Is it coming from my consideration of the person who's involved? Is it coming from a consideration that involves the greater good? And what does that imply?
The greater good.
Yeah, so it's sometimes very hard to determine what is the best thing to do.
Exactly. It's very, very hard. And the thing is that we have to keep thinking. And it's not only an intellectual exercise, but it's a heart exercise, because we have to put our own interests and biases aside.
Alfonso has his hand raised and has also put something in the chat, both in English and in Spanish. Was there more you wanted to say about that, Alfonso?
I want to express my joy and happiness with Lola's sharing a profound sense of ethics that brought me to my past years reading philosophy and reading a small book by Kant.
Yeah, Immanuel Kant.
That I put on the chat, observations about the feeling of beauty and the sublime. Because the thing that I would challenge you, Lola, is next time, since you have such a profound knowledge of ethics, to connect the beauty part, the art part of coaching with ethics. I think that is the biggest challenge, having had Terry as a master. I think the challenge is to include beauty and the sublime, because in the concept of sublime is the union between the art of coaching and the essence of coaching that you were talking so much about,
mm-hmm.
when referring to making choices from who you are.
Right.
But there is one, so to speak, one level more.
Absolutely, Alfonso. And if you look at it, for me, where I take the art of coaching, it's the philosopher Eric Fromm.
Right.
And absolutely, and this is, I always think about, it's about the sublimination, what is sublime in ethics. That's another layer.
Right. So,
and
Lola,
it's where we find ourselves with the higher good.
Right.
It's not only a question of being, of who am I? Sorry, maybe it is, but for me, the question is, who am I when I make a choice?
Right.
And I have two, so to speak, at least two alternatives. To do three, to do what I think, to do what I think I am, and to connect with the sublime.
May I suggest that we pick up with this in part two? Lola and I will negotiate another time
great
in
pleasure.
2025
with
because people
pleasure.
Have to leave and they don't want to leave.
I have just a request. Do you mind if I take a picture for LinkedIn? No? Can I take a picture? If you mind, you can just close your...
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. So gracious of you. Thank you. So that I can put a post, because I loved being here this morning and speaking to all of you. And Terry, anytime, come and speak.
We will talk.
And
thank you so much for being here.
It's absolutely fabulous.
So much. And thank you, everybody, for making this a rich experience.
Thank
I wish you all the best. Lola.
Have you taken your picture
thank
already?
Thank you very much, Lola.
Yes, I have. Thank you.
I will give you the chat.
Thank you so much, Lola. Very
my pleasure. Please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always open to speak to colleagues. I love sharing. And
thank
Terry, you're a star. Thank you. Not just a rainbow.
A thank you.
I agree.
Thank you.
Yeah, we agree.
Bye, everybody.
Thank
Remember
you,
where you were, Alfonso, so that we can pick it up the next time.